Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. We have Blackhawks hockey tonight on NBC Sports Chicago. They're back at the United Center looking to get back in the win column as the Canucks visit the West Side. Blackhawks pregame live gets the coverage started at 7, and it's game time at 7:30 on NBC Sports Chicago and streaming on the My Teams app. Sports Talk Live on location at the United Center, where it is Blackhawks Authentic Fan Thursday. Make sure to show your Hawks fandom by using the hashtag AuthenticFan. Your photos might be shown during tonight's game. Let's get the festivities started right now. And welcome in to Sports Talk Live here on location at the United Center in advance of the Blackhawks and the Vancouver Canucks on the only station you can watch Blackhawks hockey all year long right here on NBC Sports Chicago. Our show brought to you as always by the fine folks at the Chevy Silverado. I'm David Kaplan. He's David Haw, one half of Mully and Haw in the Morning on the Score and the Chicago Tribune. Charlie Roumeliotis. That's right. I know how to pronounce that name. I can even spell it. He's with us at NBC Sports Chicago. And the great hockey writer in our town, he is Chris Cook, a frequent guest on this program. All right. We've got hockey here. Blackhawks and Canucks. Hawks off to a slow start while the Canucks, 9-3-3, are playing very good hockey. So I start with you, Christopher Cook.
Yes.
What do you expect out of this Hawks team tonight? Because they need a win.
Well, they do need a win, and they know that. They needed a win the other night, and they came out flat. So I suspect that they're going to come out a little more fire in their belly and come out and really take it to them early on. You've got to ride the momentum of the home crowd. If you don't, you're in trouble because the Canucks, as you mentioned, very good team, terrific top line. So Jeremy Colleton knows that these games are important because – Central Division is very tough, and you're looking down at the standings going, oh, boy, we got a problem here if we don't win some hockey games.
Boys?
Yeah, you have to set the tone early, especially here at home. It was a pretty bad road trip performance-wise, and I know they picked up 3 points, but they were lucky to get 3 points, in my opinion. They were lucky to get a point against L.A. If things can spiral out of control quickly if they don't kind of put a reins on it, so you have to get off to a good start tonight.
I think the Sharks' loss was disappointing because of who they were playing, and up to that point, you know, you went to California and salvaged a point against the Kings, and then obviously things were going okay. This is weird to be here, Cap. I mean, you come to the United Center and you kind of have a franchise. The Blackhawks are in crisis mode, and if they lose tonight, you don't know what you can believe in. It's a year since they hired Jeremy Colleton. I thought they might have a little bit more of a defining characteristic about their style, about their team. I was stunned to read, and I think it was Charlie's story, that there's not a team in the NHL that has as few victories in regulation.
Yeah, in regulation.
As the Blackhawks.
Yep.
It's just this is a really big night because if you can win tonight, you can stem the tide of that sort of, you know, pessimism that seems to be building.
Okay, so when you look at that record 4-7-3, you have that stat in your column, and then you hear Brent Seabrook say, "Yeah, we're not having much in the way of communication." Is the communication more on ice communication? Is it more the coach with a veteran player who obviously is not getting the minutes that he wants or feels he deserves, and the coach has his reasoning behind it? Where is the communication breakdown?
To me, it's not on the ice. I think the guys know what they're doing on the ice and where they should be. I think Brent Seabrook's referring to when he was a scratch, obviously, there was some difficulty in deciding what the timeline was, is when did Jeremy Colleton talk to him. And a guy like Brent Seabrook deserves to be told why you're being a scratch. How long are you going to be out? What do I need to do different? This is a team that Jeremy Colleton takes over 1 year ago yesterday, right?
Right.
And it's a different kind of team than any. These are three-time Stanley Cup champions you have on this team. You've got guys who have been in All-Stars. You've been Conn Smythe winners. So you've got to establish a line of communication there that might be different from other players, from younger players. I think that's what Brent Seabrook's talking about. It's also a learning curve for Jeremy Colleton. You know, I mean, this is a guy who's a young coach, didn't really have the NHL experience, so you've got to come in here and learn how to communicate with players, and I still think that's an ongoing process.
Let's check out our Chevy stat of the day. Take a look at this. Some very interesting stuff here. Charlie had these numbers in his recent column. You can always follow him at NBCSportsChicago.com. Compared to their stats from the end of last season, the Hawks are worse in points percentage, goals per game, power play, shots per game, shots against per game. They've only shown improvement in goals against per game and penalty kill. When you go to the advanced metrics, they're toward the bottom of the league still in expected goals, 5-on-5 scoring chances, and 5-on-5 high danger chances. And that leads us to our Engen Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Do you feel the Blackhawks have regressed from a year ago? NBCSportsChicago.com/vote.
That word keeps coming up way too often in Chicago sports conversation.
Mitch Trubisky, yeah. Regression. Bears offense, regression.
But I think it somewhat applies here. You know, when you look at some of the categories there, and that's great research, and you feel bad about it, and you feel like, okay, this is one of those situations where what happened? Because there are two things that you counted on when they hired Jeremy Colleton. One, they said this is a playoff team. They reiterated that at the beginning of this season. Number two was the communication was going to be a strength. Both those things right now were kind of in doubt.
Yeah, and you could argue that the two stats that they made improvements in, goals against and penalty kill, a lot has to do with the goaltending and how good Robin Lehner has been. So in a way, you can look at all of those numbers and be like, I don't know if we've made significant progress in a lot of these areas.
I think the one thing, you guys are closer to this, so maybe you can answer this better. Look, you've got a young coach. You've got a lot of young players, and it seems as if feels like it could be a developmental situation if you labeled it as such, if you treated it as such. But then you've got the veterans. You've got the core. You've got Kane. You've got Taze. You still have Duncan Keith playing at a pretty high level. It doesn't seem almost compatible because you have these proud veterans who have accomplished a lot, and then you have a young coach with a lot of young players developing at a different rate, maybe at a different stage of their careers. Is that what is in conflict right now?
Yeah, I think you've got to establish what you are. Are you going to develop? Are you going to kind of tear it down a little bit here, kind of rebuild, or are you going to make a run for the playoffs? Now, this is a team that wasn't that far removed from winning the President's Trophy, right? You know, but they haven't won a first-round series in, what, four seasons now?
They won the President's Trophy, what, in 17?
Yeah.
And then
crazy.
The new well, right. You know, you've got to establish so – but you've got this core group, right? You've got these star players, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane. I put Duncan Keith in there. I know that some people are down on him, but you watch the way he's playing. He's playing very well. He's changed his style of game right now. He's playing so well defensively that, yeah, he's not getting a whole lot of points. He had a goal the other night. I think it was good for him. But you've got these young guys, or you've got these guys who are established. Now you're bringing some young players, DeBrincat, you know, Strom, guys who can play hockey and can really contribute to this team. So I don't think it's a rebuilding, but you're right. You've got to establish what is it? You come out and say, hey, are we a playoff team? And they did that. They said, we want to be a playoff team. So,
can you be a playoff team with two teenagers that you're counting on? Because they are counting on two teenagers.
Well, I think you can because you've got the other guys, right? You've got Kane and Taves. And you can't go out there and say, Adam Boqvist, okay, you need to win the Norris, right? But you can go out there, you can develop, and you watch the way he plays. Not only, but I think this is good because this is a guy that come February, whether in or not, is going to be a better hockey player because he's getting this experience now. Same thing with Kirby Dach. You know, what good was Kirby Dach going to do in his junior team? You know, that he can't do here. He's going to be learning. He's here in town. They can teach him the game. But I'm with you. You're trying to get guys broken into the NHL, but at the same time, you're trying to win hockey games.
Do you look at this coming offseason? Corey Crawford will be a free agent. I would assume that he will not be back. Maybe I'll be wrong. That's my assumption from my seat. But Robin Lehner may be getting a longer deal. He's got a one-year deal right now. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be enough cap flexibility where you go, boy, we could just ride out 2019-2020. Man, they can be impactful moves in the offseason.
Cap's already written off this year.
Well, I'm looking at this team, and I don't see –
You can't do that. You've invested $11 million in your goaltenders this year.
Right.
You can't just in November 7th write it off.
I personally believe they invested that because they went, that's the guy who's going to be our successor. We'll bite the bullet for 1 year so we can get him signed here.
Who's to say Robin Lehner, though, isn't looking at the situation as like, maybe I should use this as a stepping stone to somewhere else. So, like, it's not a guarantee that he's going to be back in Chicago, even if Corey Crawford, whatever his health situation, whether he is back or not. So I think that's another thing to factor into this.
What if he plays so well that he prices himself out of the Blackhawks range? You know, what if he is the most sought-after goaltender in free agency?
Will they have cap flexibility this offseason that if – and not him, but the next Artemi Panarin hits the market and gets an $80 million deal that they can play in that deep end of the water.
Depends on where you want to spend the money because you know that money's coming off for goaltender, right? Do you want to shift it somewhere and go with a younger goaltender, a more inexpensive goaltender? The thing is that I think that you do need Robin Lehner next year or Corey Crawford or both of them, depending on what the situation is. They've got some flexibility there. you know, I'm with you, David. It's too early to start thinking about next season, and a lot can happen. We don't know if the cap's going to go up. We don't know if the cap's going to go down. You don't know. I mean, injuries come into play. Maybe they sell some assets the trade deadline. Too early to call that, but they're going to have some flexibility to make some changes next year if you want to do that. But I'm not throwing in the towel quite this year yet because you've got a long way to go.
Let me remind you, my friend, the St. Louis Blues were in last place.
That's the rallying cry,
last
right?
January, what, 7th, 6th, whatever, in January, early January. And what did they do?
Yeah, so were the Miami Marlins. How'd they do?
I'm just saying. It's November 7th. You got them talking free agency already.
If you look at that roster, in my opinion, and again, I'm just a hockey fan. I'm going to be watching the game tonight. I do not see that roster next June playing for the Stanley Cup. I just don't.
Well, I don't either, but I think the question is, do you see this roster making the playoffs? Because
I don't, but I didn't before the season.
But they told us that this was a playoff team, and that's the standard by which you hold them. Because this isn't a team that you say, okay, if they don't win the Stanley Cup, it was a disappointing season. These aren't those Blackhawks anymore, okay? One goal exists, but that's not the same time in this growth. Playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, then somebody has to be held accountable, and that's going to be a disappointment because that is the standard.
Yeah, I think this roster is not as bad as the record says it is. Last year, you look at it, it probably wasn't a playoff team. This year, you can on paper look and say this could be a potential playoff team, but they're not putting it together. They're underperforming.
You three hockey mavens then are telling me you got a son
thank
that plays
you.
Hockey.
Thank you for anointing me hockey maven.
You
like
three
that.
Hockey mavens, is this a big enough sample to go, I know what that team is, or if it's not, what point is a big enough sample to go, yeah, that's what they are?
I don't think it's there yet because of the youngsters that are in the lineup. You're also missing Connor Murphy, who's playing the best hockey of his career, and that was a big blow on the back end. Get him healthy, see what Kirby Dach can do, see what Adam Boqvist can do. But, you know, the time's coming up, right? I mean, at some point, you got to look at the record and go, this is who we are.
Yeah, and I think there's a stat out there that by American Thanksgiving, if you're not in a playoff hunt by then, your odds are significantly you're not going to make the playoffs. So I think that's where you set the benchmark. But at the same time, their November schedule from now until Thanksgiving.
Like, oh, my goodness.
I mean, I think the next seven games are all teams that are in the playoffs right now.
And then you get Tampa coming up right around it. And they were the best team in hockey last year till they flamed out in the playoffs.
Charlie's got great stats. Look, I think you've got to see growth from the young players, but I also want to see growth from the young coach because he's a year in now, and he's not the new guy anymore. He is relatively new. He's relatively young, but he's got something to prove here because in benching Brent Seabrook, he endangered, I think, his credibility in the room with those veterans. And he may have to regain some of that ground, not only internally, but maybe with the fan base because, you know, this is his show now.
We're a year. Yesterday was a year for Jeremy Colleton, and we're still talking about whether the guys have a grasp on the system and whether they're not thinking out there. Like, I don't know. It's a little bit alarming to me, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like it's rocket science. So that's when it comes to me that it's just a roster that's underperforming right now.
Let me ask you this. Armed with the knowledge that they have today, if you could rewind the hands of time to a year ago, would they not move on Joel Quenneville?
I love that question, Cap. I love that question.
I might have to abstain from that considering where I work for.
You're putting him in a tough spot.
I was a big Joel Quenneville fan, but I'm also a Jeremy Colleton fan as well. I think that Colleton can do it. I think he's got the tools, but there's definitely a learning curve in here.
I think it's easy to say they made a mistake in firing Joel Quenneville, but I think if you're on the side of they needed a fresh voice. If you find yourself in the middle, that's fair. But to say, because at the time when Jeremy Colleton was hired, a lot of us were like, this guy is the next up and coming head coach. Like he's going to be really good in the NHL. And unfortunately, we saw flashes of it last year. They were on a 100-point pace from January to the rest of the season. They've taken a step back this year.
Much like the Cubs, it was time for a new voice. I think everybody saw that last year. I think now you need, you know, you got a young coach. He's shown some promise. Now maybe you need somebody to coach the coach. Maybe Mark Crawford is that guy. Maybe it's good to have him here. But I don't know that you can play, you know, hindsight is 20/20. You go back, revisionist history. I think maybe it was time. Maybe it was the right move. Did you hire the right guy? We don't know that yet.
All right. We've got to take a timeout. This is Sports Talk Live. We're on the concourse here at the United Center. Blackhawks, Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk Bears football. Make sure you turn those TVs back on, Mitch. We'll be right back.
Get all of your Blackhawks news in the palm of your hand with the My Teams app by NBC Sports. The best place to stream the games, watch highlights, read articles, and more. Download the My Teams app today.
Mitch said yesterday he wanted to turn off all the TVs and all the sports stations on there and see everything that people are saying about you guys and about him specifically.
Sure.
A change in mentality for him the last couple of weeks?
No, it's for him, he's been it's been the same really from the start. I did not see – I didn't watch it. I heard that he said that. I didn't watch it, so I should probably do that and get a feel for where he was. Just me knowing him and knowing how he is, I'm assuming there was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there with how he said it. I don't know that. I didn't see it. I will watch it to answer you again, but we all realize that he's getting a lot of heat right now. We understand that, and so again, I don't know the context exactly of how it was said, but hey, everybody has an opinion, right? So if that's how he feels, he's entitled to it.
All right, that was Matt Nagy earlier today. Mitchell Trubisky makes what I thought was a fairly innocuous comment about turning off the TV so the talking heads don't get into his head or, you know, keep dragging them all down, and it becomes a national story, whether it's Adam Schefter or Jim Rome or Damian Woody. Look, you know what my advice to Mitch is? And Mitch, if the TVs are still on and you're watching, stop talking. Don't give these people in the media anything because they're going to blow it up into a much bigger story. Don't give them anything. One-word answers. I'm here so I don't get fined, and go do your business.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd do that, Cap. I mean, I'm not sure that's good advice. Look, I think, though, it did get overblown. Unfortunately, he's in a position where his state of mind has become a thing because of how poorly he's played. If he were playing at a higher level, what he said, we would have collectively shrugged because it wouldn't have really meant stuff. I mean, if John Lester or Anthony Rizzo had said something similar during the course of the Cubs collapse, or even this Cubs season, you've been like, okay, you know, you've earned the benefit of the doubt by how well you play. He hasn't played well.
Agreed.
The focus is Mitch Trubisky needs to play better at quarterback. His performance at the podium is less important. It has taken on a life of its own because his confidence is down. So when he acknowledges the fact that nobody else believes in him or doesn't have any faith in him, you're reminded that he doesn't believe in himself either. So it's a difficult thing. You can't unring the bell, but there has been too much made out of it.
Yeah, well, he's the one that wants the TVs off because the criticism is on him. It's not on the team in general. I mean, I know the offense is dry a little bit, but
yeah.
Trubisky's got – I mean, he's the most scrutinized bear right now. I guess you can throw Matt Nagy in the conversation too, but
– you know, I guess – sure, it was an offhand comment, and it was blown out of proportion. But it also goes to show you that it might be in his head a little bit, right? That he knows
it's
that
in
people
his head
are,
a lot.
Yeah, which is not what you want out of your quarterback.
Right.
You want your quarterback to look in the camera and say, yeah, I got this, no problem. I've been bad, but I'm going to be better next week. Instead, you got a guy saying, yeah, I probably shouldn't listen to what other people are saying. That worries me a little bit. It just goes to mindset. And right now, I don't think he's got a very good mindset.
I wish he would have been more dismissive than defiant. And I think that's the thing you're getting at. A confident quarterback who had accomplished a lot would have been just like, you know, sort of dismiss that. Like Jay Cutler, like, you know, I would never tell somebody to mimic what Jay Cutler was like. But in this case, he would have probably been better taking the Cutler approach to it. So he didn't, you know, he's got a Sunday's a big day for Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, because he's facing a team that he should have success.
Yes.
They should be able to run the ball. They should be able to throw the ball against that Lions defense. And last year, he had one of his best games.
Forget last year.
Three touchdowns, 355 yards.
Stop it.
It's against the same team.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Same team.
He's not the same quarterback. I think this Lions defense is playing as poorly almost statistically as the Bears offense is. You know, something's got to give, and hopefully for the Bears' sake, it's the Lions secondary.
Yeah, well, you would think this is set up for Trubisky to kind of have a confidence boost, especially against a struggling Detroit Lions team. So we'll see.
The thing is that, okay, he could do great Sunday, right?
Yeah.
350 yards, three touchdowns. And that's all well and good. Everybody be feeling better. But really, these next eight games, because they're not going to make the playoffs, right? These next eight games are going to determine what happens with Mitch Trubisky moving forward, whether it's next year and, you know, you pick up his option at some point. So to me, it'd be great if he had one good game. But, well, you've got to put some together here, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I think they just have to win a football game. I know that's what sometimes people want to look at the second half of the season and he can still salvage some things. And I'm not sure you can. I mean, the body of work is not real impressive. I think you've got to win Sunday, and it changes subject because we're not spending the next several weeks talking about the damaged psyche of a bad quarterback.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, Mitch, the media's not your friend. Don't let the beast eat. Kevin Cross, our boss, always says the beast has to eat every day, the media. Don't give them anything, nothing.
And that's coming from an ex-friend of Mitch's. because you were his guy.
I'm just saying. I'm rooting for the guy. I hope he plays great.
He says you have no friends. That means you bailed on him.
Mitch, listen to me, kid. Go out and play football. Answer as little as possible. Don't be a jerk about it. Just go, I'm not going to give you guys any content because none of them up there in that room are your friend.
Can we agree on something, though?
Yeah.
Okay, so disappointing, whatever, however you want to look at what he said. I thought it was almost worse. Matt Nagy gets up there today, and everybody is talking about it. He said, did he not watch what his quarterback said?
He
did. Was creating such a stir? Was he not prepped to put some context? Isn't that part of his role? I mean, really. You know, a quarterback who's 25 years old and struggling with his confidence, I get it why he will say things that we question and wants to shut out the noise. I mean, it's difficult to be a quarterback in Chicago. A head football coach of the Chicago Bears that isn't aware of what his quarterback says 24 hours later?
And do some damage control here. And
yeah, I mean,
back,
really?
Back up and say, okay, and here's what he meant.
Maybe they offered him to see it and he didn't. I'm not taking a shot at anybody up there. All I'm saying to you is if I was in Matt Nagy's shoes,
yeah,
I would have said to someone there, get me the 29th, because I played it 100 times today. It's 29 seconds. Get me that 29-second clip. Send it to my phone. I want to see it.
Maybe they really did turn the TVs off. Maybe they couldn't get it back, you know?
Maybe.
They lost the remote.
They unplugged them all.
Yeah.
Somebody did tell me on the radio today, and I can't remember his Twitter handle, but he said Mitch actually tried to throw the remote through all the TVs. He went 23 of 55.
See, you can't help yourself.
We'll see. What happens on Sunday?
What happens on Sunday is the Bears get well. I mean, they're a bad team. They're in a rut. They've lost four in a row. They need to win this football game. It's a desperate football team playing at home. They win. I think their offense doesn't, you know, light it up too much, but I think they win just enough.
Yeah, I think whatever the offense does, it is irrelevant. I think the defense is going to win this game for the Bears.
Yeah, defense is going to pin its tail back and just go after them. I think the offense is going to be there. I think Matt Nagy is going to get an opportunity for him to kind of balance things out, run the ball when he needs to run the ball. Don't put everything on Mitch's shoulders, and I think they're going to win the football game.
I hope they win this football game. I'm getting nervous because I feel like everyone's going, yeah, we can handle the Lions.
You shouldn't be nervous. I mean, Matthew Stafford's for real. He's the NFL's leading passer. He's 10-8 lifetime against the Bears. He plays very well against the Bears. He's got some great receivers. And that passing game, you know, if they give him a little bit of time, is going to be dangerous.
What is the best way to beat the Lions? Is it passing against one of the worst secondaries, or is it running against one of the worst run defenses?
It's starting out with the run, and you emphasize that. It's also moving the pocket and playing to your quarterback's strengths. It's not ignoring the fact that you have an athletic quarterback and you want to make him into a pocket passer. If the Lions, like a lot of teams, adjust their defense and set an edge so they keep him in the pocket, figure it out, offensive genius, how to make him more mobile so he can improvise, so he can roll out, so improve his accuracy, which improves when he's moving his feet.
They just have to eliminate the three and outs. Like, you got to keep your defense off the field and actually control the ball and move the ball and pick up points. Like, it's difficult when you have another three and out and a followed by another three and out and your defense has just seen the field. I think that's what's going to be key.
You know, I just establish a run if you can early on and then go to some play action and then, you know, let Mitch do his thing with his feet, right? That's what he wants to do, right?
Can we roll him out a little
bit? He doesn't want to stand back there and try to, you know, try to throw the ball downfield 60 yards. He wants to run. He wants to get out of the pocket. Go ahead and let him do that. What are you going to have to lose if you do that?
Also, would it kill you to get a lead? I mean, they have had eight opening drives in eight games, obviously. They have 7 points in those eight drives. You've got to get out in front. The Bears have not led, and that's affected the way they play defense. It's affected their ability to run the football. And when they fall behind, they seem to panic.
Can we also stop calling this an elite defense? They're good. They're very talented. When you give up 97-yard drive to the Raiders that gets you beat, when you give up, what was that? A 16-play drive that the Eagles ran? And if you want to go, well, they're on the field, they're tired. How about the first two drives of the game for the Eagles when they're fresh as a freaking daisy? Seven-minute and 6.5-minute, both 12-play drives.
Sad reality is when they lost Akeem Hicks, I think they lost the label of being an elite defense. I mean, he means that much to this group because they just don't have the depth behind him. Excuse me, I'm all choked up.
it's going to be okay.
You okay, buddy? You all right?
Well, and also, how much is that is the defense? I don't want to like go straight to reality here, but how much has the defense lost faith in the offense that they're not pulling their weight? It's like, okay,
right,
well, I don't think we're good enough.
Okay, hold on. So Brian Urlacher went on the Waddle and Sylvie show, and they asked him that question, and he said, stop. He said, in 2005, our offense averaged 14.1 points. And I heard those guys on my team complaining. And I got our defense together, and I said, guess what? If they score 14.1, then you better not give up more than 13. And if they turn it over at our own 10, stop them three times and block the field goal. I don't want to hear one guy talk about Rex, the offense, and guess what? They got hot and they went on a run.
Yeah, but Kevin, there's no Brian Urlacher in that, right?
I was going to say, do they have that leadership in the room? Like, who's going to step up? Khalil Mack's been dipping out after every loss.
Hey, you're paying $140 million to one guy.
This isn't 2005, Cap. I mean, that's not happening this year. I mean, they're 3-5 for a reason, and this division is very good. I'd be shocked if the Bears are able to go in that kind of run. That was a special group that had, you know, this team hasn't proven to have that kind of mix yet. Because they are as limited, probably more limited at quarterback than you expected, certainly. And that group back in 2005, that was just different.
All right. We'll see how it all goes. Again, don't forget, the football after show is awesome. You've got Lawrence Holmes. You got Matt Forte. You got Alex Brown. You got Lance Briggs. You got Olin Krutz. That's where you need to dial right after the game. Bears and Lions on Sunday at noon. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, talk some Bulls basketball. Get a big win last night in Atlanta. We'll be right back.
For monster coverage of the monsters of the Midway, download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Keep the Bears at your fingertips every day of the week. Download the app today.
Do you know someone who's a Blackhawks authentic fan? We want to hear from you. Share your stories and nominate a Hawks super fan for their chance to become our next authentic fan of the game. Enter at NBCSportsChicago.com/BlackhawksAF. All right, every time I want to go out on the town and I have to have a bodyguard, I want that guy right there with me, Jamal Mayers from our Blackhawks pregame and postgame crew and former Blackhawk and Stanley Cup winner joins us here on set. So we've been talking about this team. They've got the fewest victories in the National Hockey League, just 4. When you look at this team, what has to be better tonight to beat a 9-3 Vancouver team that's really good?
You have to play with a sense of urgency, and you certainly don't want to panic at this point, which is probably easy to do in that locker room. The veterans have to play like veterans. The rookies have to play like veterans, and they've got to find a way to play with confidence. And yes, they want to be a team that will hunt down the puck and find a way to create offensive zone time by forechecking, but you have to manage the puck well, you have to win your board battles, you have to compete. When you bring that compete level, that's when you'll see this team winning hockey games. And it's like I tell my 6-year-old crew, who will be 7 on Saturday, I ask him and he'll tell you the right answer. What's more important, will or skill? The right answer is will. So they have the skill. You have to bring some of that compete.
It's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Jammer, the way it is.
You guys touched on this a lot on during the pre- and post-game shows against San Jose about their dump-in rates versus their rush chances last season when they generated a lot of offense off the rush. They're dumping it in a lot more. Can you elaborate on, is that a reason why we haven't seen a lot of offensive success this year?
Well, they're trying to transition. It's almost a cosmic shift. Last year, they dumped the puck in, as you mentioned, the least amount, 40% of the time. This year, up to 53%, which is a huge difference. So, yes, they're going to have to. To me, it's not the issue about the dumping. It's where they're dumping it, how they're dumping it, to be able to get it back. You have to dump with purpose. And to me, there's only 3 ways to do it. Soft chip to yourself or support. Hard rim along the glass so the goalie is not able to touch it. Or you shoot and follow, meaning you shoot it to the goalie's stick side because the defenders have no idea where that puck's going to go. If you don't do any of those 3 and you let the goalie touch the puck,
it's a waste.
You're going to trap 2 forwards that are forechecking. I'd rather you don't even go in the offensive zone, stand on the blue line, and have a neutral zone forecheck because you're not getting the puck back.
Now, Jamal, what I saw is that there's not enough traffic in front, not even just on goal-mouth scrambles, but I was talking to Jonathan Toews after the game the other night, and he said there's nobody in front. So the defensemen look up, and there's nobody in front. They're not even shooting the puck. How do you kind of instill that in the guys to get in front, even though, you know, you're going to get banged around?
Well, I played with a great teammate, Scott Mellenby. He's the assistant GM now of the Montreal Canadiens. He taught me to use the front of the net like a magnet. So pretend the blue paint is a magnet. You go to the corner, you come back to the front of the net. You go to the other corner, you come back to the front of the net. You leave the front of the net to go out to the high slot, you got to get back to the front of the net. You have to look also for lanes. And for me, it's forwards finding that lane. Sometimes it's not right in front of the net because everyone blocks shots. The forwards are fronting their D. You have to come out and support, maybe show your stick in a high slot, a redirection, kind of keep teams off balance. You're right, though. You have to pay a price to get to the front of the net, and that's why we talk about that will. They have to find a way to, you know, pull it out of themselves and get out of this funk that they're in.
They were stringing together really good performances, like Washington, Vegas, you look at the Edmonton, whatever. And then they go on this four-game road trip, and it seems like they were dominated for 10 of the 12 periods. How hard is it in the locker room when things are spiraling out of control to just kind of like, okay, let's take a step back here and take a breather? Like, because at this point, like, they're not even – they just have to prevent the bleeding right now, right?
Yeah, it's funny because you have to play with confidence in this game. It's any sport. You're not going to want the puck if you're not confident, but it's mind trickery, as I used to say. It's like you have to tell yourself that you're a good player. Tell yourself and, you know, build on small positives. So for me, focus on the start. Focus on the first 5 minutes. Let's play the game the right way. Let's have patience in our system and how we're going to play. Let's play for each other. Let's sacrifice for each other. And let's get it done. At the end of the day, like, they have to get it done. And I think that if they have that mindset, they'll be able to build on small positives. And they have one strong period, builds into two, builds into an entire game.
When you see the comments Brent Seabrook made about communication, there's not enough communication. How do you, as a analyst and a guy who was in that room winning the Stanley Cup, interpret those remarks?
Well, I think he's a proud, frustrated guy who certainly didn't anticipate having getting sat out two consecutive games. And that certainly was a hit to his ego and to his pride. And I think that it's a slippery slope, though, because that guy has a lot of respect in that locker room. He's a guy who's won. You know, he's a guy who's a leader in that room as well, has a huge voice. So, and you want players that are going to be upset. And sometimes friction is a good thing. Hopefully this will bring the best out of Brent Seabrook. And hopefully other guys notice that, hey, that could be me. I have to amp it up as well.
Step it up.
Dangerous, though, right? Because some players react differently to being stretched, right? And some guys use as motivation. Other guys say, hey, now, I'm not too happy, and I'm going to pout for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that everyone's a professional. At the end of the day, I think that you allow yourself to feel bad and feel, you know, angry about it, and then you put your hard hat on and you get back to work.
How good has Robin Leonard been? I know I think he saved like more than 8 goals above average, and he's one of the best goalies in the league, but to think that they only have 4 wins right now and the penalty kill is average right now, but a lot of that is also contributes to what Leonard has done. How good has he been?
He's been a real surprise. I think a lot of the question marks coming in, and it was a great signing. You think about how well he's played, and we thought, how much is it the New York Islanders and how much really is it Robin Leonard? Well, what we're learning is that it's Robin Leonard. He's found his game. He went through some trials and tribulations personally and found the right path, and it's translated into his play. And I like the fact that when he's a competitive guy. He's a great soundbite for us after a game, and, you know, you have to love his energy, and he wants to win. So, but you're absolutely right, Charlie. He's been a one really good bright spot.
Does that kind of stuff, when he's that honest in the locker room, does that resonate okay with the guys being that honest, or is it how is it in the locker? Because to us, it's great and we appreciate that honesty. But does he have to be a little careful? Like,
oh, he, at the end of the day, I was a forward, so I tell goal, you have one job: stop the puck.
Say whatever you want. You just stop the puck.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
All right, before we get out of here, we're just about out of time. The one thing that you can hang your hat on about this team, you go, I'll bet on that.
Well, the fact that their star players have to be their best. And you look at how are they going to get out of this? It's going to take a collective effort, but I look to Jonathan Toews. I look to Patrick Kane. I look to those two guys to help get this team out of it.
Lead
and
the
it
way.
Starts with hard work. And the hockey gods will probably shine on you if you do the right things. Every single night, you'll end up winning hockey games. I think they're kidding themselves if they say that they've competed the way they need to.
All right. We will see how things shake out. Have a great broadcast tonight with the guys. You guys enjoy the hockey game.
You too.
Thank you. All right. I'm out of here. We've got the Blackhawks pregame live crew coming up next. And then bottom of the hour, only place you can get Blackhawks hockey in this town is on this channel, NBC Sports Chicago. We'll see you in the studio tomorrow.